When your ideal customer's kids are begging every night to read your book, you've won. At Dinosaur House, we turn industry leaders into kids' book authors. We don't do it because it's a super fun thing to do, although it is. We do it because it's highly strategic. Imagine if every night your customers are being asked by their kids to read a book that your company made. Talk about brand affinity. You're helping your customers connect deeply with the most important thing in their lives, their kids, over something that they are passionate about that has to do with your industry. If you want to have a conversation with us about how your brand could become the author of a kid's book, just hit us up, dinosaurhouse.com. Hit the little button that says schedule a story design call. And we'll have a jam session together on just what your company's kids book could and should be.
Hey, everybody. This is Tomas Campos. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Spinwheel Solutions, Inc. We help people have better financial outcomes when they're dealing with their debt. And you're listening to The Purpose-Driven Entrepreneur.
What's up, purpose-driven entrepreneurs? It's me, your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Tomas. Tomas, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Absolutely. Love to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. But before I get into the depth of purpose and all that stuff with you, I'd love to just get some background information about your business. Like, how does your business work exactly? What is it that you sell and to who?
So we are, think of us as a technology company. The best way I can probably describe it is, you know, when you are using a piece of technology, we're not the actual, let's say, computer or the thing, we're the components inside of that. And the reason why that's important is because we enable every other company to help people who are in debt have better outcomes. And the way we do that is we make it very, very easy for people to understand the debt that they've taken on, and then the easiest way to get out of debt or to have the best financial outcome.
So your buyer is companies that are trying to help their people get out of debt? How, like,
that's exactly right. So we don't sell our solution directly to consumers. We actually sell it to the apps, the websites, and the companies that those consumers actually use. And they take our technology and embed it into their solutions so that their customers can have a better outcome.
What is the origin story of Spinwheel? Like, how did you start it? What was the initial thought behind it? And, you know, what were your sort of like early wins as you were figuring it out?
Yeah, so this is the second company that I've co-founded and started. And when my co-founder and I started this company, we really wanted to be purpose-driven. We wanted to have something that not only would be a big business, but would also help people. So when we were looking at different problems and different opportunities in the market, the one thing that came to us just over and over again was how much debt people in the United States have. And we realized that there wasn't really a lot of innovation or new technology that was happening in that space. And so we kept coming and saying, hey, you know, we have a background in technology related to finance. What can we do in this space? In the summer of 2019, my niece graduated from college. And when I interacted with her and realized how much her student debt was going to be a burden on her, it made me realize that this is probably an area where I can not only help people in general, but I can help people like my niece and my sister and everybody else that I know who has student debt to have better financial outcomes. And that was the real genesis of the company. Now, when we first thought about how we could help people the best, we naturally thought, well, look, why don't we build a consumer app or a website that people can use to help them have better outcomes with their student loan debt? What we realized real quickly was that building that was really hard. And second of all, is that us building one app ourselves is not going to be as much of an impact as building the technology that can be embedded in 10, 20, 30, 100 apps that many more people are going to be able to use. So that was the real genesis of how do we help people that are in debt, and how do we do it in a way where we can have the most impact instead of just trying to sort of get one app ourselves in front of as many people as we could.
Yeah. What was the thing that you, what was the first company that you built?
So the first company we built was a company called FluidM. It was also similar, a technology company that really used conversational interfaces. So think of Google Home or Alexa or things like that. We built an entire platform so consumers can interact with their favorite brands, can interact with their favorite merchants over these voice-enabled channels. And then we could stitch it all together across chat, web, telephony, text, et cetera.
What was the hardest thing about building each of these companies? Like what's something that you took from the first company into the second company? Like a hard lesson that you learned?
So hard lesson I learned was that the first company was, I would say, more focused on can you do a startup and can you have a successful company? And while that was, you know, that is enough of a challenge in and of itself, going into the second one, what we really wanted to do was do it in a way that it wasn't just about can we have a successful company, but can it be something that we can be really passionate about because it's helping someone else? So I think it's sort of to your point of this whole podcast is really being purpose-driven and not just having the purpose be starting a company, the purpose being starting a company that can really have an impact on people who are really struggling and for us, make the world a better place.
What's the hardest thing about building an app that is about getting out of debt?
So the first thing is oftentimes the data itself. So when I say data, most people don't know all the details of the debt that they're in. So if you ask the average American, hey, what's the interest rate you're paying on your credit card? Or what's the interest rate you're paying on your student loan debt? I think the stat is something like 73 or 75% of people who are asked that question just don't know. Yeah. And it's not because they don't care. It's just, you know, we're not trained to remember those things off the top of our head all the time. That's just not something that we think we need to know every single day. The reality is that that interest rate is, you know, is actually costing you money every single day, right? So when you take that loan or you borrow money, that's the amount of money you're going to pay extra in percentage for that. So the hardest thing is actually one, being able to get a good handle on the data on the loans that you have yourself. And then once you have that, the next thing is being able to take action on it. And what I mean by that is if you then are able to understand all the different loans that you have and all the different interest rates and how much you're paying every single month on top of those things, the very next thing that most people want to do is like, well, I want to make this better. And the hard part is how do you make it better? Is it by making an extra payment? Is it by maybe consolidating some of that debt? Is it by maybe refinancing that? Those are all actions that you need to be able to take. And right now there really, or before us, there really wasn't a way to do that. It was, you know, hey, maybe we can show you some of your data and maybe you can kind of put together an Excel spreadsheet that helps you plan a little bit better. But there really weren't any real tools that could help users be smarter about it. And not only be smarter, but actually be taking the right actions on it.
What about from the perspective of getting companies to implement your tool? Have you had any challenges there, or what sort of challenges have you had?
Well, I think you can break that down into two parts. One is the technology and the technical challenges of what would be, let's say, an implementation. That's an area where myself, my co-founder, have a lot of experience. And so we, from the very, very beginning, built this in a way to make it as easy as possible for folks to implement this. And so to give you an example of that, we have APIs, and APIs are easy ways for other applications to consume and use other pieces of technology. So we built from the ground up, you know, our APIs and made it really easy for people to use it. But the other thing we realized is that sometimes when you're dealing with debt that has a lot of data and payments and history around it, the data itself can actually be hard to build a good, compelling user experience around. So what we did on top of the APIs is we actually went and built some of those user experiences so you can have them out of the box. So instead of all of our customers having to build these user experiences from scratch every time, we said, hey, we've got some out of the box that you can use. You can now actually launch a lot faster. The amount of time you have to spend to launch these capabilities and now being cut, you know, significantly because we made it that much easier for them. So that's one thing that we knew going into it, just given our background. The other part that can be tough is just having them understand the opportunity and the value that they're going to get from helping their customers have a better financial outcome with debt. Now, maybe to you and I, that might seem very, very straightforward, but when you're dealing with, for example, banks, right? You know, banks want to think about this as, well, how am I going to make money off that? Well, you know, the thing that you have to do is you have to say, listen, when your customer is having a better financial outcome or having a better, is able to save money on their debt. That saved money now can now be used on other products, such as maybe investing with you, maybe being able to actually have more of that money in their deposit account or putting in their savings account. So being able to translate that end user experience, the value proposition to the end user, to the value proposition to the business that we're selling to, that's always sort of a tricky part when you're going sort of a B2B to C model as we're doing today.
Yeah. How have you figured out how to solve that problem of communication? Is it like an incentives misalignment, or are the banks and different like businesses that are potential buyers for you, are they like misaligned on like not wanting people to get out of debt, or where, like, where's the problem?
I think it's more of an awareness more than a misalignment. I mean, typically when people do better financially, you know, all boats rise. So anybody who's working with them, any of their financial institutions that they're working with are going to be doing better. So it's really more about the awareness of, hey, did you know that these are some very simple tools, some very simple things you can put in front of your consumers that will actually have a material impact on their savings and how much they're spending every single month. And then being able to say, oh, hey, now that I see that this is actually possible, the light bulb goes off pretty quickly and says, oh, hey, now I know that I can do this. And it actually aligns with the goal or the revenue that company is trying to make. So for me, I think it's really more of a awareness than it is a misalignment.
Yeah. So I have listeners that are in a similar boat as me, early entrepreneurs. And I always encourage my friends that are early in their entrepreneurial journey to think about like having a B2B model. And so like how you were initially, your first thought was consumer product. And then you quickly realized like, oh no, we need to create a product that businesses can use. What has been your primary challenge? Like what has been your primary way of getting customers as a B2B to B2C business? And like, where have you encountered challenges there, and how have you overcome those challenges?
Yeah, that's a huge question. And
you can start at the beginning if you want to. Like, what was your earliest method for getting customers, or how did you figure that out?
Yeah, so the earliest method of getting customers was using my network. So this may not be true for all entrepreneurs at all stages, but I was lucky in the sense that starting this company at my stage in my career, you know, I did have a pretty decent network of folks that I could reach out to and say, hey, can you give this a shot? Can you give me feedback? Can you, can you launch this and tell me, you know, if this works and provides the value that we're thinking about? So in the earliest days, was really leveraging my network as much as possible. And I would say one thing that I've also learned is that a lot of people underestimate their network. So folks who maybe haven't had a, you know, full-fledged career in financial technology, you know, you'll be surprised by asking a few people and the connections that they may have. You can very quickly get to some folks who are willing to be your earliest customers, or at least are willing to give you feedback. And in the early stages, that was the most important thing for me, is to get the feedback from folks to really understand, one, how is this product going to work for them? And what's that value that we can capture as part of that? So I'd say the first part was, you know, leveraging my network. Then after leveraging my network, it was
which
really
by the way, I agree with you that I think that basically works no matter where you are. Like for me, when I started Dinosaur House, I just reached out to six of my friends that were entrepreneurs or trying to develop a personal brand within a particular niche. And I was just like, hey, what would it look like for you to be the kids book author for your niche? And I sold it for $500 a piece back then. Those were my first like six customers.
Yeah. Right. But I'm sure you learned a ton too. I mean, and you learned from that. And then that gave you some of that initial traction you needed to then continue on that journey. So I agree with you. I think that is the number one thing. And then after that, it was really just having that confidence and, maybe I'd say probably confidence is the right word here, is to just reach out to people that maybe you have no relationship with and say, listen, you know, here's what we're doing. Here's why we believe it's valuable for you. And I'd love to get your feedback. And I think one of the things that I realized early on was that most people are open to giving feedback. I mean, yes, it's an investment of their time, but if you ask them for feedback versus trying to pitch them really hard and say like, hey, buy this product for this much, most people are open to giving feedback. And that feedback in the early stages was the most valuable thing for us because that helped us learn a lot faster.
How do you switch from asking for feedback to selling?
When you ask for that feedback and they are giving you feedback in terms of where the product could be you know, maybe better, or maybe it hits the mark or doesn't hit the mark, then it's pretty easy to transition and say, hey, so the areas where you do see that this is valuable, would you be interested in trying this? Or would you be interested in being a customer? And so I think that that transition from feedback to then asking and saying, hey, is this something that you'd be willing to use, is actually pretty natural. You know, the, I think the selling that comes in after that is, you know, when they start asking things about like, well, let's talk about the cost, or let's talk about the pricing, or let's talk about the other aspect. Well, then you're just getting to, and at that point, it really is around, hey, how do you really just capture the value and make sure that they're able to recognize that same value as you're going through those negotiations or selling?
Yeah, agreed. I love it. Okay, Tomas, the reason I started this podcast is because I wanted to ask purpose-driven entrepreneurs what it is that they're really living their life for. So when you think about a question like, what do you want to be remembered for when you die? Or what are you really living your life for? What jumps out to you as most important, both personally and as an entrepreneur with your business?
So personally, this is probably gonna be really cheesy, but I don't really have another answer for you other than the fact that I want to be remembered as just like a good human being, a good brother, a good son, a good friend, good husband. I think, and I, you know, I'm not looking for a lot of people don't need to know that, but the people that do know me and the people I care about, that's really important to me. So that's on a personal level. That's what I want to be remembered for. From a professional level, I want to be, and maybe remembered is not the right word here. For me, it's less about being remembered. Yeah, I want to be able to look back and feel that from a professional standpoint, I spent my time with my profession creating value for others, creating something that's really valuable. The thing that I really struggle with is that when you're not creating value, but you're spending time on something, it's just really hard for me to rationalize that, because you could be spending your time on so many other things. And so the amount of time that entrepreneurs like you and I spend on what we're doing, I want to feel like I've really created value for other people, right? And whether that's for employees in my company, whether it's for investors in my company, or the partners who are using our technology, or the end consumers of our partners, like all those things are where I want to create value. And I want to be able to look back and say, hey, this company and what I spent my time on and what I built truly created value for other people to me. And that's maybe an oversimplification of the way I think about it, but that's really what it comes down to, is I want to look back and say, I did something where I created value, a lot of value for other people.
Yeah. Why is that so important to you that it's one of the things that you want to hang your life on?
Because it feels like it's that's the center of it. I feel like if you, for me at least, that if that's not the focus, you can get very easily pushed off the ball. You can maybe lose. It's easy to maybe lose your way a little bit, because you can kind of get distracted by other things that might grab your attention. And so for me, that's sort of the center of this whole thing for me. And so a good way to put it is, let's say if I'm doing my job and I'm creating value for all these people in the ecosystem that I'm working with, employees, co-founder, investors, partners, then good things are going to happen. Good things are going to happen for me. Good things are going to happen for the people around me and everybody who's participating in this ecosystem. So that's really what it comes down to. And I think if you know, for me, I haven't been able to distill it any lower than that. And I think anything else other than that, it's you can get distracted and you can be focused on other things that probably are a function of creating value versus the value itself.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Okay. I've got two for fun questions I want to ask you before we go. My first one is, I'm a kids book author. I believe that part of leaving a legacy is reaching kids. What's a topic or idea you would make a kids book about if you could?
I would make a kids book, and this is probably because this is the company that I'm involved in right now, but I would make a kids book about borrowing money, right? And here's why, because I think borrowing money isn't something that people typically truly even deal with until they get to college. So many people, their first debt is their student loan debt. And the concept of borrowing money is so foreign. I mean, it's the number of people that I've talked to that have said, if I knew what I was getting into, if I knew what actually this meant, I would have done it completely different. It's because when they were 18, when they were 19, 20 years old, the concept of borrowing money was just still sort of out there.
Yeah.
But if you're a child and you're, you know, 7, 8, 9, like for example, my nephew, 9 years old, and he's starting to just get into like, hey, money is valuable. Like, he got money for his birthday just, 2 weeks ago, and he's got, you know, some money in his hand. The concept of being able to lend that out, being able to borrow from other people and what that means, I think you could distill that down into something that someone like him who's 9 years old can understand. And by the time he's 18 and facing with his own questions about potentially taking on, you know, student loan debt or a big debt, he'll be much better prepared for that and be able to understand the trade-offs and what's involved in all that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That would be a good, I don't think anybody, because the only thing I can think of is like Dave Ramsey, where it's like, don't go into debt, like debt is bad. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of value to having a fear of going into debt, but there's not a lot of content for like the pros and cons of debt, basically.
That's right. And that's why when you think about our value proposition or our mission statement is to have better debt, it's not to eliminate debt, because there are some very valid scenarios where taking on debt to invest in yourself or invest in things could improve your financial outcome. But it's that understanding of how it works that I think gets a lot of people into trouble. They just don't even understand it. They have no real concept of it until they're deep into it. And then you're still learning about it. So someone like my nephew who just got money for his birthday, and you know, he can read a book that says, hey, you know, here's what you can do with your money. You can save it, you can lend it, you can maybe borrow a bit more if you can maybe make more with it. You know, those concepts I don't think have to be reserved for people who are, you know, in their late teens or young adults. I think you can do that with kids effectively.
Yeah, I was going to say, if a book like that was like widespread read, like in, you know, school libraries and whatnot, what do you think the societal impact would be of that kind of content being widely read by kids?
I think it would, I do think in the United States, at least, it would have the potential to have a much better, it would have an impact so that the general population is more confident and more aware of how to take on debt and how to manage their debt. And the scenarios where that actually makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't always have to be with money. Like my nephew just got into playing Magic, right? And the concept of like borrowing a Magic card from his friend,
yeah,
that's a form of lending, you know what I mean? So you could do it with where it's just sort of like those things that still matter. And, you know, hey, what are you getting for borrowing that card? What did you give him back? Oh, I gave him this other card. It's like, well, that card was worth a lot more. Is that what you really wanted to do? So just things like that, where they understand the trade-offs of that.
That's good. Okay. My last for fun question for you. What's something you currently suck at that a year from now you want to be great at?
That I suck at. I mean, there's a lot of things that I suck at. The one thing that I suck at,
one thing you suck at that you want to be great
yeah.
at.
Yeah. So what I suck at that for sure I want to get better at is, I suck at having my professional and my work life impact my personal life too much.
Okay.
I know it's an easy one, but I want to get better at that. And the reason why is because, I have great friends, I have great family, I have great people around me, and, I suck at being able to be as good as a friend and you know, friend to them. And I want to be much better at that. And that's something that I think I can do a lot better.
Yeah. I think that's a super common issue for entrepreneurs. I feel that way all the time too. And for me, it's just been about like, I've had to like really narrow who I'm, you know, going to be a good friend to. And I'm constantly trying to play with that bandwidth of like, how wide do I go? How narrow do I go? And I've just recently been messing with it and getting overwhelmed. Like, oh, I'm trying to have too many people that I'm keeping up with. Yeah. Okay. This has been a really fun conversation, Tomas. Where are you most active on social media that you would want people to connect with you?
Most active on social media, I would say is probably Twitter. I will be honest. I am not that active on social media, but it's more by design.
Yeah.
I sort of made the conscious decision that I like to stay under the radar a little bit on social media. But if there is one, it's probably Twitter. Yeah, that's probably the biggest one. But you know, people will be surprised at how below the radar I am on these social media channels.
Awesome. Well, I had a great time talking to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.